large. I'm Leonard Lopate. The first day of winter is still 10 days away, but you'd never know it. So we've asked Alvin and Lawrence Ubell to come here. They join us now with answers to your home repair questions, especially about winterizing. They are the Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, a company that has inspected over 30,000 structures for over 2,000 attorneys, numerous real estate organizations, architectural and engineering firms, and private citizens. And they are here to offer their expert advice to you, our listeners. Now, you can call us at 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Alan, Larry, it's always informative and fun when you're on our show. Welcome back.
Hi, how are you doing?
Right now, I guess we're going to be talking a lot about things like warming your home and drafty windows and thermostats and things like that. I really have a hard time with thermostats. I never understand when they hold the way they're supposed to hold and when they don't. So we invite listener calls. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who need a little advice. 212-209-2877.
Yes, with winter upon us, I think that the biggest thing that we have to pay attention to is winterizing those things that we take for granted in the summertime. And that is like hose bibs on the outside of your house or on terraces.
What's a hose bib?
A hose bib, a faucet, a spigot, you know, where you connect your hose. And these things need to be shut down if they are not equipped with what we call a frost-free valve. Mm. And most are not. And so usually you
have... So what do you do, turn it off?
Yes, usually you have a valve on the inside of the house, or usually it's in the basement or on the inside of the wall. If you're in an apartment with a terrace, right where that valve is on the inside, there's usually an access hatch, and you open an access panel, you open that up, and there's a valve there. That valve needs to be shut off, and the valve on the outside needs to be opened up so the water drains out. I have to tell you, this is from my own experience. I forgot to do it at my house. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, my neighbor comes next door and tells me, you know, you have water spraying out all over my house. And it turned out that the water froze, it ruptured the pipe, and then when the water melted, the water starts freeing out. So it's important to do that. That's probably one of the most important things, and people forget. Also, bring the hoses in and also empty the hoses, because if you leave the hose out there and the water freezes in it, you can actually damage the hose and the hose can rupture.
And then there's on those valves that you have valve on the inside, sometimes they have a little cap on it that you have to turn in order to back drain it also, so the pipe that is outside is completely empty.
Now, talking about freezing pipes, if you're going away, some go away during this time of year. Should you leave the heat on in your apartment or in your house?
Yes, definitely should. If you're not winterizing the house, which I don't recommend winterizing the house unless you're really not coming back for a prolonged period of time.
And how would you winterize the house?
Well, first of all, you'd have to shut off the water feeding into the house, drain all the pipes, drain all the traps, or throw antifreeze into the traps. Now, a lot of times, some of the antifreeze, like regular car antifreeze, is not good for septic systems or drain systems. So you have to buy antifreeze that is compatible with that. Yes, it's a whole process. And then if you have a hot water heating system or a steam boiler, you have to drain the boiler and you have to drain all the pipes and all the associated equipment. So it's a process. If you have forced air, it's a lot easier. You just have to drain the hot water, the hot and cold water domestic pipes.
But so if you're leaving the heat on, at what temperature? You obviously don't want to heat up the house.
You can bring it down. Most thermostats have a high and a low limit. Mm-hmm. But they have that low limit. You could just turn it down to its lowest limit, and it's still enough heat that will prevent any of the pipes
from
rupturing.
Like 35 degrees?
Well, are you talking about the event that you're not winterizing the house?
Yeah, you're going away for a couple of weeks. And but you don't know whether it's going to go below freezing.
Right. So you set your thermostat for 50 degrees.
50 degrees.
50 okay. degrees.
Yeah. But that's, some of them are already set. You can't turn it down lower than 50 degrees.
But uh-huh. yeah, 50 degrees is what my bottom end. It gives what it. But also, I have to say that one of the more important things also is if you happen to have in your house some kind of alarm system, you can also add onto that system a low limit sensor, which would call your central station in the event that the temperature drops below 45 degrees. And then that gives someone at least enough time to make some phone calls, get a plumber there, get a friend there to figure out what the issue is and start getting heat back up in the house so you don't have ruptured pipes.
And is there an ideal temperature when you are staying in the house? Should I get up to the 80s and 90s?
What was your point?
No, the point that I wanted to say is that when pipes rupture, it's sometimes worse than a fire because it does so much damage you cannot believe all the things. The floors are warped. It does even structural damage. If it's a wood frame building, all of a sudden the beams that were supposed to support a certain load in a dry state, the wet state of the beam also causes the beam to relax.
But your question was, what temperature should you have your thermostat when you're actually there? And you know, there's this, you know, there are two things, depending on your health and depending on your comfort. Me, I'm a person, I'm pretty much a 68 degree kind of guy. Okay, I like it at night, I like that during the day. That's my temperature. Some people like it warmer, but you do save 2% of your energy for every degree you drop it for that period of time. So if you, so for 12 hours, let's say, if you change the temperature from 70 to 68, that's 4% for that 12 hours. That's could be quite a bit of money over overheating season.
But that's if you have thermostat. If you are a renter, and I'm sure most of our listeners here at BAI are renters, and they're relying on a radiator often, or radiators, or other kinds of things, HVAC, whatever, supplied through their landlord.
They're out of control. They can't really control
anything
in that house. I mean, it's that is some of the tall buildings or multiple story buildings, multiple dwellings. They have their thermostat for that building is outside. It's reading the outside temperature to calculate what the inside temperature is going to be in a certain comfort range for that particular building.
But you also have to realize you're saying that a lot of our listeners are renters, and that's true, but there are the old matrix where you have a pre-war building or a large building with a central heating plant. And in that particular case, you're out of control.
You have radiators.
Yeah, you have radiators.
And you have valves. And
yes, but you cannot make them warmer. You can only make them cooler. Mm-hmm. In other words, if they're overheating, you could shut them off. You could cover them with insulating blankets. You could close the baffles on convector radiators. So you can make them less. You cannot make them more. The most is whatever the building is supplying. But there's a new matrix where new rental buildings are having individual heating plants in each apartment. And like for instance, a co-op I inspected yesterday, each apartment in a co-op has its own boiler and domestic hot water equipment. And they have a thermostat, and they basically have a mini house system in their apartment. And they pay for that directly through their gas meter, and they pay for the electric charges to run the operation, but they can turn their thermostat down at night, they could turn it up, they can control their comfort. That is more becoming the way to go because of two things. One, it gets a building, whether it's a rental or a co-op, to offload one of their largest expenses, which is fuel. The second thing is nothing makes someone greener than having to pay their own bills. And if you're paying your own bills, you tend to turn the heat down. You look at your bill every month, say, how can I make this less? And so that is one of the things. And I find that to be a great way to go. And what's also a good thing is that when the heating system goes down, it only goes down in one apartment. It doesn't go down through a whole building.
But in a lot of newer buildings, there's an HVAC unit in every larger room.
Well,
so you can control one. You can let the living room get chilly while you're sleeping. Keep the bedroom warm, et cetera, et cetera.
And also, you have to. That is true. And I have to say that the more high end, let's say townhouses that I do, especially in Manhattan, where they have a north-south orientation, they tend to have different heating zones for the front bedrooms versus the back bedrooms. So let's say that building happens to be facing south. Well, those front bedrooms are always going to be warmer than the back bedrooms, whether it's winter or summer, because of heat loading from the sun. On the other hand, so a lot of taller buildings, especially these skyscrapers that they're putting up, these residential skyscrapers, each room does have its own HVAC system. But how that is being billed, whether that's billed as a common charge for the whole building or it's individually metered, because each of these thermostats can be connected to a central plant where a computer decides how much apartment A, 1, 2, 3, how much each one of them, those apartments pay, and then adds it to their common charge.
Yeah, but most of the buildings in the city of New York are really older buildings, and they those that have
steam radiators.
Radiators that you can get behind and don't give you enough heat sometimes. You could take aluminum foil with the shiny side facing the inside of the building, but putting it between the wall and the radiator will give you more heat coming to out of that building, reflecting it into the room itself.
And if you're not getting heat, if your landlord is not doing a good job, who
that,
do you call?
Then you got to call HPD and complain about insufficient heat that you're cold.
By the way, we want to remind people that they can call us if that you want to speak to Al and Larry Ubell. Our number 212-209-2877.
But I do want to say that in most pre-war buildings, where you have a responsible landlord management team and you're getting heat, you're going to have actually more heat than less heat. Most of these buildings are overheated, and that's not by accident. That's actually a function of the way these buildings were designed. These buildings were designed in the, like we call them, pre-war, before the Second World War.
Second World War.
And these buildings, some of them before the First World also, but the Second World War. And the thinking was is that in the wintertime, we want to have the windows open a little bit so the germs that are inside the building go out. And so that's why they are overheated. They're actually supposed to have windows open. And there's a joke when I go to my National American Society of Home Inspectors conference, the joke is, what's a New York City thermostat? And the answer is a window.
Yeah, but what's happening also over the many years that we have is the introduction of double glazed windows. What happens is the landlords have put in double glazed windows in order to conserve heat, but the system was never upgraded in order to match the heat loss that has been reduced. That's why the buildings are being overheated in many instances.
And then there are drafty windows.
Windows that don't fit, they're drafty also. And but what you can do, the best you can do is usually it comes in from the windowsill. If you stuff the track with newspaper and then close it down tight and latch it, you'll reduce the amount of draft coming in from the outside.
But I'm going to push back on that drafty window thing. I am not completely sure whether when people feel drafts from windows, whether it's actually a draft from the window or it's actual heat loss. The R value of a window, even a double glazed window or a thermal pane, is only R2. To give that in proportion,
what does that mean, R?
R2 is resistance to heat loss. Mm-hmm. What the wall system is for a normal, let's say, wood frame wall is anywhere between R12 and R20. So this is only R1 to R2. So as far as that draftiness is, there's so much heat loss at that window that heat is being driven toward the window and air is swirling around. And people say that's feeling drafty, but it's not. It's the convective effect of the air being driven toward the windows. We've had a lot of problems where they put in these, especially in Bed-Stuy, where they build these new buildings with floor-to-ceiling glass. And then they put in these heat pumps, which can't really compete with that heat loss. And people say it always feels drafty.
If you want to test whether a window is leaking air or something like that and wind is coming through it, all you have to do is take a couple of sheets of tissue paper and hold it in the corner and let it hang in front of the window. And if you see the thing really rattling, that's really a wind condition. It's not a heat transfer condition.
Because I do test that.
But doesn't something just get lost through the glass?
Yes, quite a bit, because it has such a low R value.
Yeah.
And only, like I said, a wall will have an R value between 12 and 20, and this window only has an R value of 2.
So when we see, as you point out, all these new buildings with pretty much floor-to-ceiling windows, mm-hmm. They're really bringing in more cold. Well,
they're not bringing cold in. They're letting the heat out.
Well, it's very technical because heat is transferred by several different conditions, by conductivity, by radiation, convection. There's a couple of things that are taking place simultaneously, which you cannot see because it's invisible, but it's actually taking place.
Now, I want to take some calls. Reminder that my guests are Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York, regular visitors to this show. And when they come on, they take your calls on various aspects of home repair. We're talking about winterizing, but we won't be limited to that. If you have a question
about anything
that their expertise might cover, we are inviting your calls. 212-209-2877. Should we take a couple of calls?
Sure.
Absolutely. Okay. Let's go with it.
Let's go to our first caller. BAI, you're on the air.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, gentlemen?
Okay.
What's your name?
My name is Ron.
What's up?
New Jersey. I have a question for you guys. Now, I've been living in forced hot air heat most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking, if maybe you guys could recommend something to put some moisture in the air, not a humidifier that hooks up to the system, because that's all that does. Destroy the system for a while. I've seen it over and over again. Once they start leaking, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that's new or something that would put some moisture in the air? And, you know?
Yes, there definitely is. Well, there's one way, which is just the old-fashioned way, which is either get a vaporizer or a humidifier. Thank you.
But you could do the old way. What my mother used to do is put a pan of water on the radiator.
Yeah, that works very well. The idea that if you bring up the relative humidity in your apartment or whatever it is, what takes place is that when the relative humidity goes up, your perspiration is evaporating at a lower level. So therefore, what makes you feel cool is when your perspiration on your body is evaporating and drawing the heat out of your body. So the idea is that if you moisturize the apartment, that will not happen and you'll feel warmer at lower temperatures.
But to get back to your question, is if there's something that you can do, yes, there are actual systems. One of the companies is called Nortec, where you can put a separate humidifier in your house, which draws air in and puts it back out, but it's a separate alone system, and you have a humidistat on the wall, and you can adjust it to what humidity level you want.
Is that a unit that just sits in the middle of the room?
No, it's attached. You have to find a closet or something where to hide this, but it will be a part of the infrastructure in the room, but it's a separate and apart system from the heating system. I agree with the caller 100% that putting a humidifier on the system is always a recipe for disaster. It corrodes the ductwork. It stops working. It's subjected to high heat, which tends to make them not work well, where these other more advanced systems like Nortec will tend to operate at a lower temperature and inject moisture into the air. And like my father said, the more moisture you can have in the air in the wintertime, the more heat the air can carry, and also less evaporation from your skin, so you'll feel warm.
Yeah, the thing is that if you have a humidistat or a hygrometer or something like that, or sometimes scientifically you have a psychrometer, which you can actually spin around and you figure out what the relative humidity is in the atmosphere, the number is 50%. If you have 50% relative humidity, you're very comfortable. If it goes up to 60, you'll feel clammy. Mm-hmm. If it drops below 50%, you'll feel chilly. And that's exactly what takes place with the human body in relationship to heat and moisture.
Okay.
So yes, I would try. But if you want to do the cheaper way for now, definitely a humidifier or a vaporizer. Okay?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you so much. Let's take another call. BAI, you're on the air.
Hello, Leonard.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you for a very interesting programming. My question is, a friend of mine bought a condo or co-op. She was just renting in Manhattan, and the feature was that you paid for your own electric heat.
Right.
And she used to get these enormous electric bills, And she couldn't figure out why she would keep the temperature at a reasonable level during the winter.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed to something to do with the heater. The hot water heater was always on, and and she had no control over that. So could your guest address that? I'll hang up and listen to the answer.
Sure. Okay,
thanks.
Well, first of all, heating with electricity in the New York metro area is probably the most expensive way to heat. Gas is probably the least expensive way to heat. And when I say least expensive, it's just not as expensive. And then oil is somewhere in between. Right now, the
propane can run pretty expensive. Propane
is at the same, it seems like the same price as oil, because it has to be delivered. Once it has to be delivered, it adds a lot of pricing because there's more manpower involved in it. But as far as getting back to two issues, one is, it's just expensive to keep the temperature of her space at a certain level, and that's just going to cause the meter to turn and cause pricing. As far as the water heater, she could, and again, a lot of this is expense and how much you want to spend to do it, but she could actually put a timer on the water heater that brings it up to peak temperature for the morning shower and then turns off for the rest of the day. And then that water heater will probably settle down to about 100 to 90 degrees. And unless she really needs hot water for washing dishes or anything like that, it won't turn on again until the next morning. And then it will go through that cycle all over.
But she might want to use a dishwasher or
she may.
A washing machine if she has.
Then she could also have, on that same timer switch, there's a manual override. So if she knows she's going to do it, she could turn it on and then set it and turn it back off again. But there's nothing wrong with turning a water heater on and off. That's all the thermostat does is turn it on and off.
As far as dishwashers are concerned, most modern dishwashers have a setting that if the water is not hot enough, the actual dishwasher will heat up the water inside that dishwasher.
And also some new clothes washers do the same thing, have water heaters in them. So there is that. But yes, electric heat, electric domestic hot water, very costly in this neck of the woods. But also, she should look into to see if there are any discounts or benefits for using all electric living, because they will get a discounted rate as opposed to someone like me who only uses electricity for more conventional things, which is lights and that sort of thing, televisions and computers. I have to say that I just bought an EV, an electric vehicle. So I plug the vehicle in at night. I get cash back from Con Edison if I charge the vehicle between midnight and 7 a.m. And so I have that set up, and so there are discounts out there if you're willing to take the time and look for it. I don't know where they were living, but whatever it is, PSE&G or NJ or whatever their electric company is, you should look into it. There are probably some savings and discounts you can get.
Okay, thanks for your call. Let's take another call. BAI, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Yes, I've always heard this about pipes bursting, and I've never quite understood the exact physics of it. Could you run it down for me? Why does that happen? I'm thinking the pipes themselves will contract in the cold, and I would think maybe when the person comes home and turns on hot water, it would cause them to crack as they heat up. Like you pour boiling water into cold glass, it's going to crack. But I don't think that's exactly what happens.
Is it just that the water inside turns into ice and expands?
Well, yeah, it's exactly that. Most of the pipes that we have out there are made of metal. They're either copper, brass, and in some cases, galvanized pipe. And this is a very rigid material. And what happens is that it doesn't have an ability to stretch. So when you freeze the water inside the pipe, it expands and causes the pipe to rupture. And it usually ruptures in a split. It'll either be a crack if it's either brass or galvanized
pipe. So you're
saying
the water expands. As the water gets colder.
Well, have you ever frozen? Have you ever put water into a freezer in a glass container and let it freeze?
Yeah, but I never noticed, actually. It expands?
It expands, and it usually cracks the glass.
If you don't leave enough space for it to expand.
In fact, that principle works in a big way, because during the wintertime, the ice and the water in the streams of mountains actually causes avalanches because it pushes out a piece of the mountain.
You also have to realize that water pipe is also under pressure when the water freezes. So it's already at maximum pressure and capacity for the pipe. And so now we've frozen that water under pressure and it cracks the pipe. Here's an interesting thing. There's new piping which is used, which is called PEX, which is cross-linked polyethylene, which is better known as plastic pipe to most people. This pipe will expand 5 times in its circumference and 10 times in its length. So the
Wait, you're telling me that plastic can be better than metal sometimes?
Oh, yeah. And also it has less heat loss. Also, copper has horrible heat loss for using for hot water or using for heating, where this PEX has less heat loss, so you don't lose some of the heat going through the pipes. Unfortunately, in New York City, they haven't allowed PEX piping to be used for domestic water. It's now it is allowed for heating hot water heating pipes, but that will stretch like crazy before. But there is a caveat there. The fittings will sometimes crack.
Yeah, most of the water pressure through city thing is up to from 50 to 60, sometimes 70 pound pressure, depending upon where you are in the city. The other thing is that you find in building inspections, as Lawrence and I have found over the years, that the hot water pipes have no insulation on it, which is also an amount of heat loss. So in modern day insulation, almost everything is insulated. Even the cold water pipes are insulation in order to prevent it from condensating and dripping down into the building and causing damage. So insulation was unheard of in the turn of the century up to the 1920s and 1930s, and then now everything has to be insulated.
Okay, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
No problem.
And let's take another call. BAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yep,
you're there.
Yeah.
Good afternoon. I wanted to...
Could you speak a little get a little closer to your phone? You're coming in very softly.
Yes, I wanted to, maybe you answered my question here. I live on Long Island and I rent.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know which is the least expensive way to heat my my one-bedroom apartment. I just bought a small space heater that's going to run on the electric versus obviously the gas. So am I doing good or am I doing wrong for myself here?
Yes and no. Yes and no. And why I say yes and no is because how much when you're at night, you're heating the whole apartment, but you're only sleeping in one room. So if you're heating the whole apartment, you're spending money to heat the whole apartment as opposed to that one room. But using an electric heater is a higher cost method of energy of heating. And so you may end up using more electricity for that period of time, which may be more money than the gas that you might be using. Is it gas heat, by the way?
It is.
Okay, because if it's oil, it's kind of almost a wash. But with gas is so much cheaper that it may be more efficient to heat that other room or the other spaces in the apartment to get the savings, where the single heater for the bedroom may actually consume more electricity. The only way to really, and it's so hard to do a test because every month, every day, every week is different, unless you're going to do the real calculation of finding out what the heat days, how many heat days you have, which is a calculation heating companies use to figure out how much the temperature is above and below a certain temperature, and they calculate it. And trust me, it's crunching numbers. Mm-hmm. And if you love using spreadsheets, go to it.
And if you watch the weather report on television, you know that it isn't always accurate either.
Well, no, the degree days are a history of what had happened, not what's going to happen. So that's a history of records that they keep for all the degree days for every day in a particular area of the planet. You know, so like New York, like Brooklyn has a particular reading. Queens has one. Staten Island has one. And maybe Staten Island may have different ones because we have high altitude and low altitude. So these things are factored into that sort of thing. Because how else does the oil company know when to drop off oil?
You know, some people will just turn on their oven. to keep the place warm.
That's dangerous if it's a gas oven.
I don't think I like that very much.
I'm crazy about it. I would not suggest using your oven, especially if it's a gas oven, because when you're burning that much gas, you're putting in also chemicals into the atmosphere, and also that gas is consuming oxygen simultaneously, because you can't have combustion unless you have oxygen. So there's a lot of things taking place. An oven, a stove, is meant only for cooking, not for heating your house.
But now that we've said that, if you are cooking, check your thermostat. You may be able to turn your thermostat down. I'm serious.
Warming up the room.
Yeah, you are. If you're cooking, if you're doing a slow roast brisket and it's cooking in the oven for 3 hours, you've just heated up the building for 3 hours. So that heat has to go somewhere.
And what about fireplaces? Some people have fireplaces.
Fireplaces take heat out of a building because you have the fireplaces. The fireplace is sucking in oxygen. And it's sucking it from someplace. It's sucking it from the outside, which is cold. So it has to come in through the cracks or an open window or somewhere. And so that goes up the chimney. Or most of the heat that is produced by the logs in the fire is going up the chimney. It's not going into the apartment.
Now, there is a caveat with that. Unless you have an energy-efficient fireplace,
yes,
which tends to have glass doors on them, they tend to have heat exchangers around the insert. So heat from inside the room goes through the heat exchanger and comes out hot. But you're really isolated from the fireplace, so all that romantic crackling and everything is kind of taken away from you. And the same thing with the gas fireplaces also. They tend to take out more heat because, you know, you have this flu effect where air is rushing up the chimney and it's taking the air you warmed up in the room and it's putting it up the chimney.
We are taking your calls at 212-209-2877. This is Leonard Lopate at Large on WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Regulars on Leonard Lopate at Large are Lawrence and Alvin Newbell of Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, and we're taking your calls at 212-209-2877. But I need to take just a few moments away from this to remind you that we're fundraising. When we have to go do fundraising because, we have to keep the station going. We don't take money from foundations. We don't run any advertising. We rely totally on our listeners, you people, to keep us going. And we ask you to call us at 516. Give me that number again. I'm sorry. 516-620-3602, or go to our website, WBAI.org, and follow the instructions. And joining me now is my executive producer, Jesse Lent, who has some other information.
Hi, Leonard. It's great to be here. Well, I just wanted to let people know that we are getting some contributions, some individual donations. Some people who generously contributed and asked that we not mention their name on the air, which is, of course, fine. We thank you for your support. And we're also getting some BAI buddies, people who are sustaining members. But as we've been saying throughout this drive, because of this sort of singular situation with the station getting knocked off the air by a rogue group of the at the Pacifica Network, the need is really great. We are broadcasting from our brand new studio, which hopefully people are noticing a crystal clear quality in our voice now that we're here. I know that you bells are ringing out more clearly and beautifully than ever. And I hope you appreciate that. And I hope that everyone listening understands that that is the result of donations by you and listeners like you, and that without you, we could not have done any of this, or nor can we continue to bring you Leonard Lopate at Large from 1 to 2 p.m. every weekday. So that's why we're asking all of our listeners right now to step up, pick up that phone, and call 516-620-3602, or go to the website WBAI.org and follow the instructions. You know, Leonard, obviously our listeners have noticed that we've been preempted a couple of times for the impeachment hearings. But
and I want to say something about that, because I've followed the impeachment hearings, and they're both fascinating and boring at times. They do drag on.
They are enlightening.
Yeah, but we would like our goal here is to just be fascinating and not be boring. And we can only do that if we get the right guests and work under the right circumstances. And we hope that you will help us out. If you save some money, Alvin, you had a suggestion.
Yes, people save money. Over the years, and here at WBAI, where we show all of America how to go forth, fix, save energy, money, and do it safely. And if you feel that we did help you out, just send us 10% of what we think you saved, including your life sometimes.
Right. But yeah, if you save some money, if you got good advice and acted on it, we hope that you will. It's almost like a tip in that case. So give us that call. It's 516-620-3602.
Again, 516-620-3602.
Or go to our website.
And that is WBAI.org.
And we hope that you'll do it in the name of Leonard Lopate at Large. And I want to go back to our guest today. So we hope you can keep on calling that number, 516-620-3602. But we have listeners who've called into our other number, our call-in number, and we want to go back to them. Mm-hmm. With Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. We're talking about winter and winterizing, but as I said earlier, if you have some other issue that you have to deal with that falls within the area of the Ubell's expertise, please give us that call as well, 212-209-2877. Should we take another call? BAI, you're on the air.
Hey, what's up?
Hello.
Is that you?
Yes,
you.
This is us.
Okay, great. Three questions about frozen pipes and issues. I installed a valve that they say is good for external use. It replaced the valve that I shut off inside. Is there anything I have to do with that valve? Any caveats?
This is one of those very long valves, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. They said it was code.
Yeah, but how long is the valve? How long was it that you bought? The 8-inch, the 10-inch, the 12-inch?
I think it's a 12-inch, but it's pretty long. It's
okay.
Somewhere between the 10 and 12.
Okay. I mean, my advice to you is to either, on the inside, if it's still accessible, to cover that pipe with insulation and all the way up the pipe. That way, it's not affected by the cold air on the outside.
And what kind of insulation are you talking about?
It could either be wrapped on fiberglass. It could be applied foam insulation.
But, I mean, is there an outdoor insulation that I would get at my hardware store?
Well, this is inside where he's insulating. But so it could be wrapped on neoprene. It could be any kind of insulation. But what I find what happens is that the cold air chills the outside of the pipe. And I had one of those frost frees, which were only 8 inches long, and the pipe still froze on the inside because of how cold it was, and the heat loss transmitted all the way up the pipe to where the water was.
Yeah, that's because the pipe is made out of metal, and metal is a very good conductor of heat energy. So therefore, the heat from the building is being sucked out of the cold air outside. So the whole metal also gets below the freezing temperature.
But the most important place to insulate is where the cold air may seep in around where the hole is. So you want to insulate that hole to stop the cold air from outside from coming to the inside. Okay?
Does that help?
That helps a lot. But here's two related questions. So I asked them if they have, because it seems to me that the valve stays open. So someone could pass by and on the outside turn it, and then the water would come out.
Right.
So I suggested to put it.
Well, you can always put
it. Or if
you want to in the winter, you could put some coat of lock on. And they do have those for different kinds of valves in the city. You see that sometimes there's a faucet on the outside and there's a little lock box with a key, and you have to open it up. I'm not sure what neighborhood you live in, and it's kind of uncommon for people to start stealing water that way. Mm-hmm. But that point notwithstanding, another thing is there's probably a shut-off valve on the inside, which you can just shut off for the wintertime anyway, and that would give you double protection.
Thanks so much for calling us.
I would like to get back to the thermostat problem, mm-hmm. that people think that their thermostat, which is a little dial on the wall someplace in the building, is like the throttle on a car. You know, in other words, they come into a cold house, and right away they push the thermostat up to 80 degrees or something like that. The heat doesn't come up any faster if it's at 80 degrees. I'm telling you, only set the temperature at about 68, 69, 70. 71 should be the maximum, and leave it alone. You have to understand, when you come into a cold house, not only are you cold, the air is cold, but the furniture is cold, the walls are cold. So when you're trying to warm it up, before you feel comfortable, those walls and the couches and the chairs and the beds have to warm up also. And that takes a lot of heat energy, and it has to be. You have to have patience and to take time to have that happen.
I have, and what tends to happen is if you set it for I'm freezing in the house. Let me set it up to 80. Well, what happens is you forget about the thermostat, and all of a sudden you realize the house is overheated. It's now at 78 degrees. And you need to open windows up because now it's cold. It's too warm, and now you're wasting all that energy by throwing it out the window anyway. So no, it's not an accelerator pedal. It's just a switch, and set it to the desired temperature and leave it alone. I find sometimes I'm inspecting a home and I walk in and it's freezing in there, and I'll turn the thermostat I'll see that the thermostat is set at 80 degrees, and then I'll go around the outside, and then I'll come back into the house. Now it's overheated, and now the thermostat's set to 60 degrees. And I go to the owner, what's going on? He says, well, it was cold, so I turned it all the way up. But then it was too hot, so I turned it all the way down. And it's like, it's insanity. Set it to the temperature you want and leave it alone. And if you need to adjust it, 1 or 2 degrees.
But then when you're leaving the house, you can lower it a bit.
You can lower it, and
because there's no reason to keep it at 70 degrees if nobody's home.
That's correct.
You should buy a clock-type thermostat.
Or actually better, a remote-access thermostat that you control from your smart device.
Mm-hmm.
So that way you can actually turn it down, and before you head home, you could turn it back up. And actually, some of the remote-access thermostats will actually monitor where your phone location is, and so as you're heading home, it will turn it back on. So you can...
Yeah. Okay, should we take another call? Okay, BAI, you're on the air.
Hey, what's up? Hello?
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 Yeah, what's up?
Good afternoon. My name is Caleb.
Hey, Caleb.
Hi, Caleb.
Yeah, I'm calling from Queens, yeah. I have a two-family home.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes, and I put it at 74, 75.
Mm-hmm.
Before it can go upstairs. The tenant upstairs. So
in other words, you have to keep your downstairs at 75 so the upstairs will get to at least a reasonable temperature, correct?
Yeah, that's what happens.
What kind of heat do you have? Steam or hot water?
Gas heat.
What?
Gas heat. Hot water is separate.
Okay, so I'm kind of assuming that you have steam heat. Okay, so you
Yes, I do.
Okay,
I do.
Fine. Usually on this show, when I ask what kind of heat do you have, I'm usually asking forced air, steam, or hot water. What's happening is the downstairs is closest to the boiler, so it's getting hot first, and you have
But then heat rises as well.
It does, but that's not the problem because the thermostat is in the rooms where those thermostats are that get hot first, and that satisfies the thermostat, and the thermostat says, okay, all well and good, I'm shutting off now. The problem is upstairs is where the temperature is. So what you need to do is you need to actually force the steam upstairs, and the way you do that is on all the downstairs radiators, you have to put steam vents that have smaller orifices, and on the upper floor you have to put steam vents that have larger orifices. So it forces the steam to go to the upstairs first, heat that up, and then slowly heat the downstairs. This is a very tedious and time-consuming and trial-and-error method of balancing your steam system. But what this is telling me right now is that your steam system is out of balance, and so that's why the upstairs is getting... The other alternative, which I know you don't want to do, is put the thermostat upstairs. But then what will happen is your downstairs will be overheated. And so that's a problem also. You really do have to spend the time, do a little research about how steam systems work, about unbalanced steam systems. But it's really about getting different air vents in different steam vents in different parts of the house so they evacuate.
Is this why they invented Google?
That's one of the reasons. The thing is that the radiator that's geographically the farthest from the boiler has to have a steam vent, which is the largest orifice. So the steam comes up to that radiator first and then fills in all the rest of them. Because what it's doing is it's evacuating the air out of the system.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, thank you very much.
Hopefully it helps. It's a pain. It really is to get those steam systems to balance.
Yeah, balancing a heating system in a house to make it totally comfortable really takes an effort. You almost have to buy thermometers that you have to put in each room and monitor what's going on and then adjust it like this is a little bit heavier, this is a little bit lighter. Yeah, sometimes a room is cold and you want to force the heat to that room. That's not the room you should be looking at. You should look at the rooms that have too much heat and try to force the heat to go back to that room by putting smaller orifices, by maybe shielding off some of the radiator. If you have a long, like a baseboard radiator, put a cover on that half of it, and that may force the heat to go to the lower temperature areas.
Some private homes have thermostats on all floors.
Right, but those are used, not steam systems. I'm going to say... Generally, and when I mean I don't want to say always because that's really a bad word, but generally, and when I mean generally, like 99% of the time, most steam systems are single zone systems. One thermostat, on, off, that's it.
Let's take another call. Hi, BAI, you're on the air.
I think that's me, right?
Yes,
that's
it's you.
Great. I have two systems. I've had forced air, and I wanted to substitute hot water.
Mm-hmm.
So I had baseboards put on the downstairs and the upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the baseboards were not working. The hot water was not working properly.
Mm-hmm.
And my contractor said you have to make sure that the hot air is on before you will get the baseboards to work. But I recently had a heating guy come, and he got it to work, but it only worked for 1 week. And every time I've ever had it not work, I've had to go downstairs and press a reset button. And I don't understand why it's going off. My first contractor said it's because our generator tests itself outside,
mm-hmm.
the generator, and when that happens, it might turn off this hot water thing, and then you have to reset it. But the heating guy that came last week found that the flame thing needed to be cleaned off and made it work again. So it was great for 1 week, and I didn't even need the forced air. I turned the thermostats off completely, but now it's not working again.
Okay, so there's a lot going. There's a lot to unpack here, which is
right.
Fine. but one of the things that it seems is that you're having – this is a gas system?
Yes.
Okay.
Gas,
yeah.
Making the hot water hot.
And when you said you had to reset it, you had to light the pilot light again?
No, I had a button I could press on that said reset.
And then
it stirred it up again.
Was that reset on a controller that had...
On a panel in front of the hot water panel.
In front of the... I would... Okay, here's what I'm going to do, because this is a lot to unpack, and really to figure out what's going on, and doing it by telephone is probably not going to work for me. But my email address is larry@accuratebuilding.com.
Okay.
Just spell it the way you normally do.
Yeah.
And if you can, remind me of who you are, and take some pictures of the panel you have to reset,
all right,
the equipment, take a pictures of everything, and then email me the pictures, and we'll take a look, and obviously include your telephone number, and I'll call you, and we'll have a discussion. I'll give you a private radio show just for you. I'm very partial to hot water systems. I think that they're the best.
They
don't dehumidify. You don't hear them. You don't feel them. They're just amazing. And so let's try to get that to work.
Let's hope that it works. Thank you so much for your call. Go ahead.
Question, that is when you talked about the outdoor hose that we should turn off on the inside. So I went downstairs to look for that little faucet, but there's no faucet there. There's something that's stuck in the wall that I can't really reach.
Good. Take pictures of that, too, and we'll talk about that.
I think it will need a faucet or it'll need some kind of a tool to work on it.
We'll do that pro bono.
Add that picture also,
Thank you for your call, and good luck. And by the way, before we're running out of time, and I think we could get one more call in here, but you have Twitter addresses and other things. How do you recommend people get in touch with you?
It depends on which of the two of us you want to talk to. If you want to talk to me, it's larry@accuratebuilding.com. And if you want to talk
with a capital A and a capital B?
Doesn't have to be. It's an email address. It could all be caps as far as I'm concerned, if you want to yell at me. Mm-hmm. And for my father, it's alvin@accuratebuilding.com.
Okay. Let's take one more call. Hi, you're on the air.
Well, good afternoon. Glad I made it under the wire.
Yes, what's the question so we can get
the
answer out?
I wanted to go back to something that was discussed earlier, and that was warming an apartment, for example, not necessarily a home, but a private house,
mm-hmm.
but an apartment using the kitchen appliance of the oven. It was mentioned that primarily it consumes oxygen. Very true. But... In contrast, bakers leave their ovens on constantly. They never shut them off. Their customers aren't dropping like flies.
You know what?
I
agree with you, and I'm going to clarify. I think the whole thing about using ovens for heating has to do with more of a safety issue because, it's not going to consume – it's going to consume oxygen, but we're not going to all suffocate because houses are pretty porous and they're going to get an air supply from somewhere. And like you said, on Thanksgiving, we're cooking our we're cooking our turkey for hours and hours. I have to say that I think sometimes it's sleepiness at the end. One should also check their carbon monoxide detector because it's not unlikely for a gas oven to actually produce carbon monoxide. But I think
I thought it just produced water.
No, it should produce carbon dioxide and moisture. But if it's not firing properly, it could produce CO. So that's another issue. But the other thing, I think the big thing about leaving flames on a cooktop or leaving the electric grills on or leaving the oven open or so on, it's because it's just dangerous and people will walk into them and burn themselves because people are not really paying attention to a lot of things. Flame could go out. A cat could walk across the oven, get its tail on fire, and then you have a whole other problem. So, I mean, it's just not safe to just leave unattended appliances. There are a lot of inspectors in my business who says you should babysit all your appliances. In other words, you should just not set them and leave the house, whether it's a washer, dryer, or even a dishwasher.
Yeah, but the thing is that
makes good sense.
Thing is that if you leave an oven on while you're sleeping, that's what people do. They leave the oven or the burners on while they're sleeping, and all of a sudden it happens that the utility company turns the gas off for a second, and all the pilot lights shut off, and then all of a sudden there's no flame, no ignition, and then it's on again,
and
everybody is suffocated from all the gas.
Yeah,
so it's a big problem.
That's what I was thinking the flame going out and start and gas flow ceases and starts up
especially,
again.
Especially,
I wasn't thinking of actually heating while you couldn't attend to it.
Yeah.
That wasn't my
idea. I agree with a lot of what you say and the questions, but it's just that, you know, if there's a lot of ifs in this if statement, but if the thermal coupling's not working properly and some other issues, you could have some problems. And you know what? I don't think it's worth it, but I have to also be realistic that if you're freezing to death, you will turn on your oven to keep the place warm. You know, if you don't have heat, you're certainly not going to let your family freeze.
Alas, yeah, we have run out of time.
It's better to be safe than sorry.
Thank you both so much for being on our show again, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell.
Thank you.
Building inspectors. And again, the email address? If they want to reach
you? Larry at AccurateBuilding.com. And
when we're back again.
And Alvin at AccurateBuilding.com.
And when we come back, we'll go show all of New York and America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money.
And do it safely.
And that brings us to the end of today's show. If you're new to our program and you like what you've been hearing, you can access past shows streaming on demand at WBAI.org. We are available on iTunes Podcast. And don't forget to check out Leonard Lopate at Large on Facebook and Twitter and our website, LeonardLopateAtLarge.com, where you can find links to all of our past shows. Tomorrow, Peter Asher will discuss his front row seat to Beatlemania as a close friend of Paul McCartney and an A&R man for Apple Records, the band's label. And he'll also talk about his successful career as a record producer, working with artists like James Taylor and Linda Ronstadt, and also a recording artist as part of the Peter and Gordon duo. We'll see you then. And as I said earlier, our pledge line is active once again, so why not show your support for Leonard Lopate at Large by making a donation of any amount right now by calling 516-620-3602 or by going to the website WBAI.org and following the instructions. In the past, we've told you about all the expenses we have at this station, like our antenna, the phones, equipment, gas and electric. We've been talking a lot about that. And, of course, rent. But ever since BAI was knocked off the air for a month by the rogue faction of Pacifica Network, the need has become even greater. And we need your help just to get our facilities back to the level that they were before the station takeover. I'm happy to report that we are finally broadcasting from our new studio, which has been constructed for the better part of last year. So I'm sure you've been able to hear a big leap in sound quality and reduction in noise, but that means we need all of our listeners to step up and show their support to keep the quality of Leonard Lopate at Large up to the standard that our listeners expect and to make sure that the show is never interrupted again. The best way to do that is to make a contribution of any amount that you can. And if you can see a way to becoming a BAI buddy by making a sustaining monthly donation in the name of Leonard Lopate at Large, you could do that by going to our website, WBAI.org, or by calling 516-620-3602. Sustaining membership means that, let's say you become a sustaining member for $10. $10 every month will be taken out of your credit account or your checking account, whatever you prefer. And when you decide you don't want to do that anymore, you could just say, okay, stop it. But meanwhile, it allows us to plan ahead and know that we're going to have some kind of cash flow and not hit as many crises periods as we have been. Every amount helps, whether you're becoming a sustaining member or becoming a one-time contributor. And whatever level you contribute at, the important thing is that you step up and give. And we thank you all from the staff, mostly volunteers here at Leonard Lopate at Large, for your generous support.